This is The End User, episode 95 for Friday, May 25th, Browsing for Browsers with Browsers. Hello and welcome to The End User, the show where we get together and talk about our experience with consumer technology with a bit of news from your perspective. The End User.
It's the tech news that you can use.
I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm cyberspace cowboy, Taylor Moore.
Hey, we're going to make a movie out of that one. It's going to be a Cowboy Bebop sequel or something.
Were you not familiar with my autobiographical movie endeavors?
No, I had no idea you were working on an autobiographical movie of some sort.
Yeah.
It's
Casting is complete. You're Philip Seymour Hoffman, in case you were wondering.
Oh, man. It's the Taylor Marr story. It documents your switch from Windows to Mac in whatever year that was. What year was that?
About 2007. It was a multi-year transition.
Yeah, well, it's 2012 now.
It's kind of a Julia thing. You know, it's like a memoir about me, plus then also about Steve Jobs. There's some overlap there. Aaron Sorkin's writing it.
Oh, good. Good deal. Who's directing it?
Me, of course.
Oh, okay. Okay. Well, say hi to Aaron for us. It's 2012 now, though, so you can switch back to Windows 7.
No, I haven't spent equal times in each.
All right. Well, like I said, it is 2012, so let's talk about 2012 news.
Okay.
We've got a full docket of news this week. We've got a good lineup, I think.
Yeah. A lot of stuff happened. I mean, there was that Facebook IPO everybody talked about on Friday and then completely forgot about.
Yeah, it really fizzled, didn't it?
Well, we'll talk about in a bit why it fizzled. What do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about that, or should we talk about Yahoo getting into the browser game?
Yeah, what is Yahoo doing? Who, what, why, and how? So Yahoo is getting into the browser game, and their browser is called Axis. It's for iOS, and they're trying to get you away from textual searching. They're trying to get you into a more visual mode of searching. So you type in whatever you want to search for, and it gives you a visual preview of the website.
Yeah, I think this is kind of a bad idea. I mean, you're just trying to render websites even smaller than they already are on your mobile device. And so nobody's going to be able to read what's going on there. I mean, it might work for a few select websites, but just because somebody is searching for something doesn't mean they're looking for a particularly visual website.
Yeah, and I think they've got the order mixed up. I think when you're searching for something, you want to get the headline first to see if it's relevant. And then you want to get the preview, maybe the first picture in the article or something like that, so you can get an idea of what that site may be like to go to. But so I think Google's already doing this correctly, right?
Yeah, I mean, I don't particularly like Google's implementation, but the idea that, you know, they'll give you the headline articles all in a list, and then when you scroll over them, you can get a full column preview. I do like that idea, but in practice, the way Google does it is annoying.
Yeah, I could see that. And also, I don't know what they're like on the iPad. It's way different on the mobile devices. You have a Google app or something, and it doesn't quite work the same way.
That's true. They kind of just stick to the old ways.
Yeah, but I don't know. We'll see. Yahoo is just flailing, right? Like, what are they doing?
Clearly they've been working on this for a long time, and maybe there'll be something to it. Maybe it's got a lot of nice features besides the horrible way to search.
Yeah, and you know, we try not to talk about it, but there's been a lot of like executive drama over at Yahoo, and I don't care about that stuff. I want to see what products they've got. And right now, from the end user perspective, that they don't have a lot other than sports. And by the way, their sports site is huge, but they're not terribly exciting for technology enthusiasts right now. And
right.
if they wanna come back, they need to change that. I mean, all they need to do is be exciting again. Of course, it's easy to say.
Well, that certainly does seem to be the case, and clearly they're trying. But,
yeah, they're trying. Give them credit for that at very least.
This doesn't seem to be it, at least not yet.
Yeah, not yet. Well, you know, maybe they'll release some updates. We'll keep an eye on it and see how it goes. But
maybe.
I don't see them getting a whole lot of traction with it, but yeah. I would like to use this at some point.
Yeah, so do I. So would I. I suppose I could. I haven't yet.
And speaking of things that confuse us, Microsoft is launching its social site. I thought they were not going to release this. It's called Social, which is also confusing. That's S-O.C-L. And
capital S, lowercase O, dot capital C, dot lowercase L.
Yeah, it's the S-O.C-L Epic 4G Touch, is actually. that was its code name.
No, S-O.C-L Explore Extreme 9000 Plus.
No, 9001 Plus.
Ah, okay.
But yeah, I got a chance to flip this on for myself and use it, and it's a little bit confusing. They, you open the homepage, and the first thing you're confronted with is a search box. And when you do a search, it shares it with your profile. And so I guess you're sharing what you're searching? I don't understand.
Oh, quite. No, that's not good.
Yeah, that's not good. Why would I want to do that? It's a little confusing to me. And then if you click off to the right, there is an actual like status option. But as it is, the very first thing you see is a search box, not a status box. I don't know. It seems kind of like wandering. I got the impression that they made this network for internal purposes at Microsoft and that they weren't going to release it to the public. But I guess that's not the case.
Yeah, apparently not, because they've released it. But it's, you know, they're not making a lot of waves about it just yet.
Yeah,
It's released, but they're not hyping it up very much. Not like they are those Bing commercials with the dubstep.
Yeah, the
it's too much dubstep.
Yeah,
really?
It's too much. Also, those Bing commercials with the crazy people talking were a bit much too. So, but I just, you can sign in with Facebook or with your Live account. It's just kind of bizarro. I don't know what they're... I feel like that some people inside of Microsoft made this thing, and they were like, hey, look, you know, here it is. And then someone's like, well, I don't know. We're not going to release that, are we? And then someone else just decided to, okay, push it out. Why not? It's a little bizarre. Huh? I'm not sure quite what to think of that. But, I mean, do you see it getting adoption? I don't see anybody actually using this, right?
No, not really. I do not. I mean, you really got to push to get people interested in a new social network. These things just, they don't just take off on their own.
I've got enough already. I mean, you've got Facebook, you've got Google. I can't even keep up with Google Plus. I don't even post on there very much. So adding one more to the mix is just too much.
Yeah, so I don't see people switching to this. Maybe we'll eat our words in 6 months.
Yeah, maybe. Probably not. Let's be honest.
Probably not. That's true.
All right, well, let's move on to something I don't really care about, but it's big news in the technology industry, so we kind of have to talk about it. Facebook has debuted its IPO. So what happened?
Right. Taylor? Well, it went public. They started selling shares on the stock market, and... And they opened at $42 per share. Or no, is that how they were selling it? It was, yeah. So they opened at $42 per share. They climbed up to a little bit higher than that, and then they closed the day at $38 per share. So by the end of the day, without even selling all of the stocks yet, the price of the stocks had already dropped by 11%.
Yeah, and I, just from staring at the news cycle, I feel like there was all this excitement, and people were excited about the IPO, and this was going to be the biggest tech IPO in a long time. And then, you know, it actually came out, and things just kind of deflated immediately.
Well, it still was a very large tech IPO.
Yeah, yeah, it still was, right? I mean, Mark Zuckerberg personally made like $1 billion, so you know, it's still a large IPO, but. And what does the end user think of this? Do we care about the business of things? I guess we care if the company is succeeding, but...
Mark Zuckerberg made a great deal more than $1 billion. He made more than $10 billion.
Oh, is it that much?
Well, I mean, he expected that he would be worth that, but it was all in unvalued shares before, and now the shares that he owns have a market value. And that is $20 billion.
Oh, yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah, but the question remains, does the end user care about this, or is this there was no, like technology involved here. Like, we already had the technology.
No, not really. That's true. Nothing changes unless you bought Facebook stock, which we didn't. And if you did, we're sorry, and congratulations. but there is some other Facebook news this week. They announced another app Facebook has several apps, at least for the for iOS. I know this. Despite the fact that they bought Instagram a couple of weeks ago, they've decided to come out with their own dedicated camera app.
What?
Yeah. So it's a camera and photo app, and you just open it up and you take a picture, and then it automatically shares the picture to Facebook, and it even has filters.
Oh, it's got so. Do you think they were actually rolling some Instagram technology in there?
I think maybe they were working on a camera app in case the Instagram thing didn't go through, and now they've got one and they didn't know what to do with it, so they just put it out there.
Right, right. And in the chat room there, it says Facebook 2.5 Windows Phone app. Yeah, I just updated mine today as well, and I haven't used it a whole lot yet, so I don't really have an opinion about it one way or another, but the Facebook truck rolls on.
Right. And so then remember that Facebook doesn't just make apps, but then they also have apps. You know, you can sign up for Farmville if you really want to, or you know, all these apps for Facebook. And now they have their own little app center store type thing for people to find apps. Because it was getting kind of complicated to find lesser known apps in Facebook and sign up for them. And then you couldn't get to them on your smartphone, and you didn't know how to handle them, and so now they have their own app center. So
I avoid Facebook apps like the plague. I don't know about you, but I'm not interested in Facebook as an application platform, and clearly I'm the minority. I think I get the feeling, and maybe I'll eat my words on this, the end user at thedigitalmediazone.com if you disagree with this, but I feel like less technical people use the Facebook apps more.
I think that you probably have a worse opinion of Facebook apps than are really out there. I mean, sure, there's plenty of Farmvilles and
yeah,
stuff
yeah,
that Zynga makes that are just time wasters and stupid mini games and things that we don't really need to think about. But there are a couple of apps out there that are really able to leverage your social network on Facebook in ways that do cool things and also are not invasive into your personal data.
Yeah, and I think you're right. I think I'm thinking about the Farmvilles of the world, and I just kind of wrote off all applications because of that. So maybe I should jump back in and have a look around.
And people wrote off Twitter because it's like, why does anybody care what I had for breakfast? But Twitter has other uses besides that.
Yeah, and we'll see. And I like Twitter better than I like Facebook in the first place. So maybe I'm just a weirdo, I guess.
Well, I think that you've wrote it off a little bit too soon. And there's plenty of stupid junk out there on Facebook. And by all means, you shouldn't sign up for everything. But there are a couple of cool things that I could mention, but don't feel like that are using Facebook apps in an interesting way.
Yeah. All right. Well, shall we move out of our top news segment and go into our afterburners, speed things up a little bit?
Yeah, sure. Let's turn on the afterburners. Okay, I'll start. Mozilla, makers of Firefox and Thunderbird, if you use Thunderbird, they are creating a new app, and they are going to call it WebMaker. And the point is that it's going to make people easier to code and design and publish websites.
Yeah, so this has been in the works for a little while now, and I feel like it's pretty interesting. It's trying to bring website making to the end user. I like it a lot.
Yeah, I think this is really great, too, because everybody should know a little bit about how to make a website, and if you have an idea and you can just make a website for it, then that's much greater. Everybody should basically be able to have a website if they want to.
Right. And it looks like Windows 8, which ships with Internet Explorer 10, is going to ship with Adobe Flash, which is a little bit different than what we thought was going to happen. We thought that Internet Explorer would not have the ability to have plugins in the Metro environment, and it seems like that's not the case. So if you were worried about not being able to watch Flash videos in Windows 8 Metro, Internet Explorer 10, that's a long string of things to keep track of, then don't worry about it. You will be able to, it seems.
Yeah, I wonder how they're going to manage this, if it's going to end up like how Apple manages their Flash plugins, where they have to release their own custom code to update the plugin.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll find out when they release it. It's not that far off.
Well, HP announced this week that they are going to lay off 27,000 employees. So that's like 8% of their workforce.
And Amazon is going to start allowing you to test drive application Android applications on the web before you install them on your phone. This is a pretty cool capability, and I'd like to see Google do this.
Yeah, I wonder how they implemented that, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't know. Some kind of like Android emulator in the web? That's pretty crazy.
Yeah. So TiVo, we've complained about them before being a technology company with backwards technology. I know, Chris, that your pet peeve was that they didn't have an HD menu for a very long time.
Yeah, for a long time. Also, no commercial skipping.
Right. Well, no, TiVo was the original commercial skipper.
No, I mean automated commercial skipping.
Well, they automated it, and it was more automated than anyone else. You know, they had the 30-second skip button, and for a long time, nobody else had that. Anyway, they're catching up. They're releasing some new things. So they're going to release an IP set-top box. So you can hook it up to cable and then stream it over the internet or over Wi-Fi. Also a streaming box that works with mobile devices.
Cool. So it's almost like they're integrating like a Slingbox kind of thing, and then you can stream to your mobile devices. That's really, really
right,
cool.
Right, basically,
actually.
Yeah. And they've also released a bunch of new UI tweaks and a Netflix app and a new YouTube app and some other stuff. So they're working on catching up.
Yeah, I feel like this is TiVo getting modern, and I like it. I want to see more of it. But right. I'm good with my media center for now.
So in news on the browser wars front, aside from the ones we've already talked about, according to StatCounter, Google Chrome has passed Internet Explorer. And so it's more people are using, according to this metric, more people are using Google Chrome than Internet Explorer, but just by 0.3%.
Yeah, it's not by a whole lot, and I find it surprising how many news sources picked up this story, because you go to some other website usage share based statistic websites, and just for example, net market share has IE at almost 54%, and Firefox at 20, and Chrome at only 18, so it's even behind Firefox according to their statistics. So I'm not sure how much stock you can place in this, but the trend is clear, I think, is the idea at the end of the day.
Yeah, that much is for certain.
And then one last bit, the Internet Explorer, according to NetStat, Internet Explorer had 37.8% and Chrome had 23% in the United States, which is a little weird. Do you think that's business influencing it, perhaps?
Yeah, probably. It has a lot to do with that.
Corporate desktops and the like.
Right. Don't other companies have the same setup?
I would think so. For some reason, I get the feeling that American companies would be more likely to use Internet Explorer for some reason. I don't know. Maybe that's totally misplaced.
I don't know. Yeah. Don't have too much experience working for foreign corporations.
Yeah, I've never worked in Brazil, so I don't use Orkut. So with that, Taylor, let's turn off the afterburners.
Yes,
and
let's turn them off.
We'll move into our The End User stories. You have a green tech story for us. This one's pretty cool.
Well, you pulled this one out of the ether.
Yeah,
but,
I guess I have a green tech story for Taylor that Taylor will talk about to you.
Because Chris would rather not talk about a green tech Apple story. So Apple is making big steps to going green. They are trying to convert all of their data centers to zero net energy data. And so for their big new data center in North Carolina, they have officially been approved to build a 20 megawatt solar farm, which will power the whole system.
Yeah, this is really neat. I love the greenification of data centers.
But why stop there, Chris? Why stop there?
I remember there was a story a while back on some, I think it was Google's data centers. It was Facebook's data centers. And how they designed the building specially to be really carbon low, if not neutral. And it's really cool stuff what they're doing. They open sourced it all.
They used seawater to cool these.
Yeah, that's right.
In one of the buildings.
Yeah, so this is pretty neat. If you can make your gadgets carbon neutral, or at least their energy consumption neutral, then that would be an awesome win for all kinds of reasons.
Yeah, true. So Apple is starting with all of their data centers, they've already got this one in the works, and then they're going to move on to basically all of their domestic operations. They want them to be carbon neutral.
Yeah, that makes sense. And this is the kind of thing that Apple can do with all their money in the bank that other companies can't, right?
Yeah.
Like, do you think that this is a money net positive for them, or it's an it's an investment maybe?
It's really hard to say.
I don't know
what their finances look like.
We don't have the resources to tell.
Other companies do attempt this, you know, not all of them. But some companies that don't make as much money try to stay green, and some companies profit off of it, and some people get publicity. But anyway, getting off topic here.
And so earlier we were talking about commercial skipping, and here's an interesting one. The Fox, CBS, and NBC are suing Dish Network over their product that automatically skips commercials. And, we try not to talk about lawsuits on the end user, but I thought this one was interesting because... I know there's all kinds of legal wrangling that happens with terms of service and that kind of thing, but how could they possibly stop this?
Yeah, it's interesting because I feel like the content networks have so far tried to use the carrot, like, you know, when TiVo started doing fast forwarding or skipping commercials, the networks came in there and they said, hey, when your users are skipping commercials, can we put an ad in there? And TiVo for a while was like, yeah, I guess, okay, sure.
I guess so.
They decided not to. But now I guess they're trying the stick. And I suppose maybe they think they have some legal precedent that suggests that they have the constitutional right to force people to watch advertisement. I don't think that is going to stick.
Yeah, and again, you know, it's legal wrangling, right? But it's like trying to stop people from ripping their DVDs. It's probably not going to happen, right?
Yeah, but it's not like that. I mean, there is a fairly straightforward argument to be made that someone ripping a DVD is doing an illegal thing. I don't see how you can make that kind of straightforward argument for someone fast-forwarding commercials.
Yeah, I guess it's a little bit more complicated, just due to the way the entire cable industry works. I mean, these guys make a living off of their advertising.
Right. But due to the way lawsuits work, complications weaken the argument.
Yeah. But the thing that is similar is that, I mean, I can do this on Media Center with ComSkip or Show Analyzer or one of those plugins, and I can put a TV tuner in there, and I can record cable TV. And I guess they're not worried about it because it's a little niche. But when Dish rolls out its DVR strategy and it also includes ad skipping, then maybe they get a little bit more upset than some nerd in his basement with a Media Center, I guess.
I mean, I guess they have the right to be worried about you or anyone who subscribes to Dish Network skipping ads, but that doesn't mean they have the right to sue over it.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, I guess we both thought that was kind of interesting because...
Yeah, it is. It is interesting.
It's a strange development. Doesn't really make any sense to me.
All right, well, move on to my story. I've got a new pair of headphones, Taylor, so I thought that we could talk about it for a minute. And they're stereo Bluetooth headphones. And you've yet to get into the stereo Bluetooth headphone game, right?
Yeah, that's true. I don't like having unnecessary batteries.
Yeah.
I think cords are just fine for my headphone needs.
Anyway, I talked about this on Entertainment 2.0 when I was on there this week, which... I'll mention later, but I've had some time to sit with these things, and there's a couple oddities about it. I thought that when I bought stereo Bluetooth headphones that I wanted something.
Well, now, what kind did you get?
Oh, sorry, I should mention that. They're Plantronics Go. In fact, we talked about it a couple weeks ago on the podcast.
Oh, we did, yeah. These are the new, smallest stereo Bluetooth headphones.
The ones that already existed. But I thought, just from looking at pictures, that I might want headphones like this that are just earbuds that go in my ear and a wire that wraps around it. Turns out that may not be the case. It fits a very specific use case because of the way the earbud has to seal into your ear and to stay put, And it has that weird thing where if the wire rubs up against anything, then you can kind of hear it, and you can kind of like hear yourself chewing and like hear every footstep you take and that kind of thing. So I find that bit of it really irritating. But then at the same time, you get an extra bass boost because it's shoved so far down your ear canal. So that they sound a little bit better than other stereo Bluetooth earphones I've used. So if you want that style of earphone, then they're going to be good. If you don't, then they're not for you.
So these incredibly lightweight, ultra-mobile earphones sound really great, but only if you stand perfectly still.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So, you know, I can get on the train or something and be good, but as soon as I take a step off the train and start walking around, I hear every footstep I take.
And can I ask how much you paid for these technological marvels?
Yeah, they were $100.
Woo! Yeah. Well, that's a steal.
Well, no, and you know, I'm not going to return them or anything, and I plan to continue to use them, and because they
as
do
opposed
sound...
to your other stereo Bluetooth headsets, you're going to move on to this.
Yeah, the reason that I bought them in the first place because the other ones broke.
Ah,
so I needed a replacement. We talked about it, and I thought, okay, well, you know, I can just get those.
Well, that's pretty cool. My sarcasm aside.
All right, well, let's move on. You have a tip of the week for us, as you always do, it seems.
I do, yeah. So the big five cable internet providers, that's Xfinity, Time Warner, Cox, Bright House, and Optimum. I haven't heard of those last two. They are teaming up to offer Wi-Fi hotspots so that you can get some free Wi-Fi internet when you're not at home, as long as you're paying for it at home. So I guess that's good if you have one of those five providers, which neither of us do. But they are setting up, they've already set up 50,000 hotspots all around the U.S.
And so they're trying to do what AT&T was doing, I guess.
Right. Basically, I think that their implementation is a little bit better than AT&T had it initially. AT&T has succeeded in making it really easy to sign into their hotspots for free if you have an iPhone.
Yeah, and they even wanted to do something with the SIM card to make it log in automatically. But I don't know. It'll probably be a little while before we see that.
So it's not quite that simple if you're trying to use this service, but... you can head to cablewifi.com and find your provider, and it'll tell you where to go. Or if you happen to be in one of those Wi-Fi hotspots, you just have to log in using your credentials or something.
Yeah, cool. Well, if you have one of those cable providers, then go experiment. See if that's working out. Because we can't. We need to rely on you.
Well, yeah, that's true.
All right, so let's move on to our last story of the week. And this one's from you again. And it's quite interesting. I've never seen anything quite like this.
Yeah, so our kicker this week is a guitar. We both dabble in the guitar, Chris and I do. And this one has an iPhone jack.
An iPhone jack?
Yeah, you plug in your iPhone. You just kind of snap it in there. So these are technologies that have existed already. So it's one of those learning guitars where there are lights in the fretboard that show you where to put your fingers. And then it's a self-tuning guitar.
Yeah,
Gibson
that's
has had
pretty cool.
These for almost 2 years now. Yeah. And then you can also plug your iPhone into it. So these are three technologies that have existed before, but they are being combined now. This is definitely a guitar for people who don't already play guitar well. This is definitely for people who want to learn. It's a Kickstarter project, as you might imagine, but they've already hit their target.
Yeah, this looks really cool, and so there's an app, or at least they want there to be an application on the phone that you can use to read tabs and stuff like that, I'd imagine. And I don't know, do you really need to embed a phone into the guitar, though?
Well, it's either that or build a customized computer into the guitar. I mean, I think the point of putting the phone in there is that it just it makes it easier to program the software and the hardware.
Yeah,
and,
I guess
and update it on the fly. I mean, that's why iPhones are being put into everything these days. It's just a simple platform.
It just seems goofy to have to plug the phone in to the guitar. We have wireless. Why don't we use it? Why don't we use ANT or Bluetooth or something to I guess it doesn't have ANT, but why don't we use Bluetooth or something to get the data over to the guitar instead of just plugging it in?
I suppose that's a decent question. Maybe that'll be version 2.
Version 2, yeah. I'm starting a Kickstarter tomorrow. No, I would have to actually develop a product to start a Kickstarter. But yeah, I don't know. It's interesting. And maybe the answer is that the iPhone SDK allows for plugging in the device like that. It's the same thing with Android has special APIs for dockable stuff, I think. So maybe they take advantage of all of those features of the development kit. That's my guess. But anyway, it doesn't take away from the fact that it's a phone embedded in a guitar that tunes itself.
And has a light-up fretboard.
Right, exactly. You can't miss that.
So we thought that was pretty cool. And that was the only thing that we thought was pretty cool.
That was the only thing. Not the rest of the podcast. You can ignore the rest of the podcast.
Well, they can't ignore it if they've gotten to this point. What are they listening, backwards?
I guess audio is linear, isn't it? So.
Plus, they can't ignore the movie podcast.
No, they cannot, because it's back! The movie podcast at thedigitalmediazone.com has been off for about 3 months now. I guess the guys, James and Michael were busy for a little while there, but they're back and better than ever, and they're ready to get into the swing of things. So that's pretty exciting. So go over to thedigitalmediazone.com and have a listen to the movie podcast. You'll enjoy it. They talk about Avengers this week. It's a fun one.
Oh, I saw it. It was fun.
So that will do it for the end user. Thank you, everyone, for listening to the show, and you can find more information at thedigitalmediazone.com under The End User. That's THENDUSR. The DMZ has a few other podcasts, like we mentioned. You might also check out my appearance on Entertainment 2.0 this week. That should be posted soon. And Scene in HD will be coming back soon. And, of course, the movie podcast that we just mentioned that is back already. So you can send us some feedback for the show at theenduser@thedigitalmediazone.com, or you can follow us on Twitter. We are at @theenduser. Join us live every Thursday night at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. I am your host and producer, Chris Barnes.
And I'm Taylor Marr.
Thanks for listening, folks. We'll see you next week. Bye-bye.
Want some shawarma? Have you ever had shawarma?